Pueblo, December 16th, 1892. Jenny McCoy stood at the window of the private reception room and looked outside. It was cold, and a light dusting of snow was beginning to fall. She watched as a rider passed by, the collar of his coat turned up and his hat pulled down. Behind her, a cheery fire blazed in the fireplace. Accepting Adele Summers' offer to be a hostess in her establishment, Jenny's beauty, bearing, and education quickly made her a favorite of the more affluent gentlemen who visited the club. One such visitor was the Honorable James Dawson, governor of Nebraska, and he was with her now. Governor Dawson stepped up to the window beside Jenny.
Doesn't it make you feel good to be all warm and cozy inside when it is so cold outside?
It certainly does.
Jenny turned and walked over to a table where sat a carafe of coffee.
And a good hot cup of coffee makes it even better. May I pour you a cup?
Indeed you may, my dear. I must say, you are the most beautiful woman I have ever laid my eyes on.
Jenny brought the cup of coffee to the governor and handed it to him with a smile.
My goodness, governor, if you flatter everyone that way, it's no wonder that you got elected governor.
Oh, but I mean it, my dear. I mean every word. You are...
Suddenly, the door to the private reception room was thrown open, and four men rushed inside. Three of the men had pistols in their hands, and the fourth was carrying a camera.
Here, what is the meaning of this? Do you know who I am?
Oh, yes, Governor, we know exactly who you are. Now, suppose you just go over there, have a seat on the sofa. Don't make any trouble.
Who are you? What is this all about?
If both of you do exactly what we say, no one will be hurt. We just want a picture. That's all.
A picture?
A picture, yes. Miss, I want you to take off all your clothes and then go sit with the governor. We want a picture of you, naked, beside him.
What? No, that will ruin me.
I will do no such thing.
Oh, you will be photographed naked with the governor. Now, whether you're dead or alive when we take the picture makes no difference to us. The effect will be the same. You can take your clothes off yourself or I'll shoot you and we'll strip your dead body.
Oh, you had better do what they say, Jenna. I have a feeling that these men have been sent by my political enemies, and I've no doubt but that they will do just as they say.
Well, now, Governor, you are smarter than I thought you were.
Frightened, Jenny removed her clothes, then sat naked on the sofa beside the governor. The photographer took a picture, and a moment later, two of the sheriff's deputies were brought into the room. Seeing Jenny nude with the governor was all they needed to bring a charge of prostitution against her. Luke Chardine was lying on his bunk with his hands laced behind his head, looking up at the ceiling, when Proxmire and another deputy came in with a young woman. Proxmire opened the door to the cell next to Luke.
All right, miss, in there.
Wait a minute. What are you doing? You can't put a lady in this cell.
She ain't no lady. She's a whore. Come on, deputies.
She's a female. You can't put women in jail with men. They have to have their own facilities. That's the law.
Since when'd you become a lawyer?
You don't have to be a lawyer to know that.
We ain't got no cell for just women, so she's gonna have to stay here for a while.
The woman sat down on her bunk.
I'm sorry about this. It's not right them bringing you in here like this.
Thank you for speaking up for me.
I'm only doing what's right, Miss McCoy.
Have we met?
No, we haven't. But I've wanted to meet you for some time now. I just wish it could have been under better circumstances for both of us.
I'm not a whore, by the way.
No, ma'am. I know that you aren't. I'm Luke Chardine. I own a ranch just north of town.
Luke Chardine, yes, I know who you are. You own two crowns, and I read about your case in the paper. Everyone I know says they don't believe you're guilty.
I'm not. Oh, I killed Bates, all right, but he and Sheriff Farrell were trying to hold me up.
Is she in here? Just what are you doing putting this poor girl in jail?
Looking up, Jenny saw Adele Summers come storming into the cell block, followed by Deputy Proxmire.
Jenny, I am so sorry. Deputy Proxmire, you let her out this very instant, or I will go to the newspaper with the name of everyone who has visited the social club in the last 6 months. Do you understand what I'm saying? Everyone!
I can't let her out until the judge says I can.
Really? Would that be the same Judge Briggs who was with...
Adele took a piece of paper from her pocket and unfolded it.
Sandra, Sarah Sue, Kate, and Ella May?
All right, I'll let her out. But she has to be present for her hearing tomorrow, and if she ain't, I'll hold you responsible.
She'll be there.
She better be.
I hope everything goes well for you, Mr. Chardine.
Thank you, Miss McCoy. And you as well.
Your Honor, Jenny McCoy is not a prostitute.
Adele spoke at the closed hearing the next day.
Does she or does she not work for you?
Yes.
And do you run a house of prostitution?
I run the Colorado Social Club.
Which is a whorehouse.
I don't like to think of it in quite those terms.
Regardless of how you like to think about it, it is a whorehouse. And if you deny that, I will lock you up for perjury.
All right. I admit, Your Honor, that I do have, ladies of that profession in my employment. But Mrs. McCoy certainly isn't one of them. Her only function is that of a hostess, not as a prostitute.
But you do employ prostitutes.
You know that I do, Your Honor. I might even add that you have, let us say, personal knowledge of that fact.
I am not the one on trial, Miss Summers. Jenny McCoy is on trial, unless you want me to extend the charges to you as well.
No, Your Honor.
Then, we will continue the hearing, and you will add nothing except your responses to my questions.
Very well, Your Honor.
Would you say that Jenny McCoy is a hostess in your establishment?
Yes, that is exactly what she is. She's a hostess and nothing more. She's guilty of nothing.
That's where you're wrong, Miss Summers. Mrs. McCoy was soliciting to provide sexual acts for money. Maybe she wasn't soliciting for herself, but she certainly was for others. And the penalty for solicitation for prostitution is the same as it is for prostitution itself.
All right. If you're unable to see the difference, I won't argue with you. How much is her fine? I'll pay it.
I'm afraid that won't work. This is far beyond having one of your women caught with a cowboy. You see, the gentleman she was with is the sitting governor of a neighboring state.
I know that, Judge. Governors, congressmen, senators, and judges have all visited the Colorado Social Club. And the more cultured of these gentlemen want to spend some time with Jenny. Not as a sexual partner, but as a conversationalist. And why not? Jenny is the most educated and intelligent person I know, man or woman. And you can see with your own eyes how beautiful she is. It's no wonder that such people find her interesting.
Nevertheless, if it gets out that the governor was with Jenny McCoy, it could have far-reaching consequences. Therefore, my sentence for you, Mrs. McCoy, is that you leave Pueblo.
What? Where will I go? What will I do?
Like Miss Summers said, Mrs. McCoy, you are an uncommonly beautiful woman. I'm quite sure you will be able to find some means of supporting yourself. I just don't intend for you to do that here.
I am not a prostitute.
This hearing is adjourned.
Adele walked back to the Colorado Social Club with Jenny, comforting her as best she could.
I have never been so embarrassed and humiliated in my life.
Nonsense, my dear. You have nothing to be humiliated for or embarrassed about.
But what will I do? Where will I go?
You can go to Red Cliff. I have a brother who owns a nice store there. I'll write to him and ask him to give you a job.
Would you? Oh, Adele, you have been such a wonderful friend.
Colorado Springs, December 17th, 1892. In the town saloon, Bob Ward was meeting Felix Parker, a man who had served time with him in the Colorado State Prison in Cannon City. Also present at the meeting were three men Parker brought with him, Roy Compton, Gerard Kelly, and Melvin Morris.
From what I've learned, he'll be on the Red Cliff Special leaving Pueblo at 9 o'clock on the 19th.
What day is that?
Monday, Parker. Day after tomorrow.
How are we going to work this?
You four will board the train in Pueblo. The train will have to go through Trout Creek Pass. That pass is 9,000 feet high, so by the time the train gets to the top of the pass, it won't be going any faster than you can walk.
Well, that's when I'll go to work, right? I'll go up front then and stop the train.
Right. And while everyone is distracted by the train being stopped, Compton, you, Kelly, and Morris will take care of the deputy who's escorting Michael, then come to the front with him.
Then, I disconnect the train from the engine, and we'll go on over the pass, leaving the rest of the train behind.
Exactly. And I'll meet you in Big Rock with horses. After that, we'll go get the money.
Yeah. Are you sure the money is there?
Let's put it this way. The money damn well better be there because Michael knows what'll happen if it ain't.
He's your brother.
Yeah. So was Cain's brother Abel.
Claro, Nevada, December 17th, 1892. Matt Jensen opened his eyes and looked around his room. The shade was pulled, but a small hole in the shade projected onto the wall a very detailed image. Not a shadow, but a photographic image of the winter-denuded cottonwood tree that grew just outside the hotel. It was already mid-morning, but a heavy green shade covered the window and kept out most of the light. He got out of bed and got dressed. Then, he pulled his suitcase from under the bed and began packing. He had received a telegram from his friend and mentor, Smoke Jensen, just the day before.
Duff McAllister is at Sugarloaf for Christmas. Suggest you spend Christmas with us. Smoke.
Matt headed for the Central Pacific Train Depot. Pueblo, Colorado, 7 p.m., December 19th. 1892. Matt had been traveling for 2 days and his train was now less than 1 hour from the Pueblo train depot, where Jenny McCoy had just purchased a train ticket on the Red Cliff Special, due to leave at 9 p.m. The judge had given her 1 week to settle her affairs and leave town, but it had taken her only 3 days. That didn't leave time for Adele to write to her brother and receive a reply, so she wrote a personal and impassioned letter that she now gave to Jenny.
Show my brother this letter. He's a good man with a good heart. When he reads this, he and his wife will take you in. And if he can't find work for you in his own store, I've no doubt that he'll help you find employment.
Thank you, Adele. I don't know what I would have done in this town if it hadn't been for you. I don't know how I would have made a living.
It's I who should thank you. You were a wonderful and classy addition to my business. I'm just sorry that things turned out as they did. The judge had no right to order you out of town.
I have made some good friends here, you especially, and I'm sorry to have to leave them.
Someday you may come back, and when you do, remember that I will always count you as my dear friend. Goodbye.
Jenny secured Adele's letter in her purse, bought a newspaper, settled in a seat near enough to one of the two roaring pot-bellied stoves to feel some of the heat, and began to read.
Michael Santelli to pass through Pueblo. Outlaw on his way to be hanged. Michael Santelli, the notorious gunfighter who is said to have killed 17 men, met his match when he was confronted by Deputy Sheriff Ben Mason and well-known Western figure Matt Jensen in the town of Kiowa. Santelli was tried for the murder of George and Elaine Rafferty. The killing occurred when Santelli robbed Rafferty's grocery store in Red Cliff. Convicted of the crime, he is now being transported to Red Cliff, where he will be hanged. He is expected to pass through Pueblo, where he will be put on the train to Red Cliff. Deputy Sheriff Braxton Proxmire, who will escort the prisoner, says that he does not expect any trouble.
Senator Daniels to visit Redcliffe. Will speak at Republican Christmas Eve dinner. Senator Daniels has made no statement as to whether or not he will run for governor of Colorado in 1894. He has, however, been a frequent speaker at political gatherings, such as the Republican Christmas Eve dinner being held in Redcliffe on the 24th instant, thus giving rise to speculation of his future plans. Senator Daniels is known to be a vocal opponent of the procedure of paying coal miners in company script that can only be redeemed in company stores. He has proposed a bill in the state legislature which would prohibit that practice. He has also proposed that the mine owners be responsible for building shoring and other such means of ensuring the miners' safety. As it now stands, all safety improvements are paid for by the miners themselves.
As Jenny finished the newspaper, she looked up to see Deputy Proxmire enter the ticket office, leading Luke Chardine and Michael Santelli, both of whom were in handcuffs. Deputy Proxmire prodded the two toward the bench where Jenny was sitting.
You two men sit right there while I get the tickets.
Oh.
Jenny started to get up.
No, you stay there as well. You're being run out of town, so you're as much under my authority as these two men are.
Jenny, her cheeks flaming in embarrassment, sat back down.
Hello, Miss McCoy. It's good to see you again.
Hello, Mr. Chardine.
You remembered my name. I'm flattered.
Of course I remember your name. I also remember that you're a rancher.
I was a rancher. Now I'm a prisoner.
I'm so sorry.
I am too. I finally met you, a most attractive and very pleasant young lady, and now I must leave.
Lady? She ain't no lady. You heard what the deputy said, didn't you? This here woman's being run out of town. What'd you do, girlie? What? Cat got your tongue? You a whore, ain't you?
Jenny again said nothing.
Well, I'll tell you what, darling. I'm about to get myself hung. And if you had any kindness in you, why, you'd let me enjoy this almost last night I'm going to have on Earth. What do you say, me and you go over there in that corner and have us a little poke?
Please, I'd rather not talk.
Yeah? Well, I'd rather not get hung. But we don't always get what we want.
Santelli, why don't you leave the lady alone?
I told you she ain't no lady. She's being run out of town because she's a whore, and you're calling her a lady?
Yes, I'm calling her a lady.
Tell me, darling, what if I just...
With both hands cuffed together, Luke brought his fist around in a powerful stroke. The blow knocked Santelli out. His body slumped in his seat, then hit the floor.
I'm sorry, Miss McCoy. I apologize for his rudeness.
No, you have no need to apologize for him. You have nothing to do with him, and you've been most kind to me. I appreciate your coming to my aid.
At that moment, Proxmire returned.
All right, I have the tickets here. We can board as soon as... What the hell happened to him?
He went to sleep.
He went to sleep, huh? Did you, help him?
I might have sung him a lullaby or something to get him in the mood.
Santelli came to a moment later.
Yeah, what happened?
You fell out of your seat. You should sit up straighter.
Say, when I come back here, 4 years from now, how would you like to have dinner with me?
Oh, I would be glad to have dinner with you.
Good. Now don't you be backing out on me. I plan to hold on to that thought for the next 4 years. That's what's going to get me through it.
State Senator Jared Daniels paid his bill at the Victoria Hotel, then walked back over to one of the upholstered sofas where his wife Millie and their daughter Becky were waiting for him. Millie was holding her hand to Becky's forehead.
What is it?
I don't know. She feels as if she has a slight fever.
It's probably from the heat here in the lobby. It's very cold outside, and I think they go overboard a little on the heat. How do you feel, Becky?
I don't feel good, Papa.
Well, you'll feel better after we get out of this lobby. A little cool air will do you good. Come on, the trolley will be here directly.
Millie made certain that her daughter was well bundled up. Then they stepped out into the frigid night air. Just down the street from the hotel, Parker, Compton, Kelly, and Morris were having a beer in the Lucky Strike Saloon.
Are you sure he's gonna be on this train, Parker?
That's what we were told, Compton. Besides which, it's in the newspaper today. I seen the story myself. He'll be on the train.
Do you really think Santelli had enough money to give us $500 apiece? That's $2,000.
Ward says he does. And he probably has a lot more than that. There's no telling how much money he stole over the last 3 or 4 years. I'd be surprised if he didn't have $4,000 or $5,000 hid away somewhere.
Which ain't gonna do him no good if he's hung.
Exactly right. So as soon as we get him away, he'll take us to where he's got the money hid.
What if he don't do it?
You heard what Ward said. If he don't do it, we kill him.
Yeah, that's what he said, all right. But what if he just told us that to make sure we come in with him?
It's a little late to be thinking about all that now, ain't it? I mean, we're already here. Train will be coming through tonight. I say we go through with it. Unless $500 don't mean nothing to you.
No, I didn't say I wasn't going to go through with it. I was sort of thinking out loud is all.
Well, don't think. No need to be thinking. Everything's already been thought out for us.
It's getting pretty close to time. I expect we better get on down to the depot.
Once inside the depot, the four men moved to the stove to warm themselves for a moment. Then they stepped up to the ticket window. After the four men received their tickets, three of them went over to the farthest side of the depot waiting room. But Parker went over to Santelli.
Santelli, Bob Ward is an old friend of mine. He said if I saw you, I was to tell you hello.
Oh, really? You've met with him recently?
No more than a week ago.
Well, thank you. And thank you for bringing the message.
Here, get away from my prisoner.
I was just passing on a greeting from a mutual friend.
You have no business with my prisoner. I'm going to ask you again, sir, to move away.
Whatever you say, deputy. I'm not one to cause trouble.
Santelli turned and looked at Deputy Proxmire.
Is that our train?
No, that's a southbound. We'll be on the Red Cliff special going west.
As Jenny sat then, she saw an overweight, well-dressed man, a woman, and a child come into the depot. The man pointed to one of the long wooden bench seats.
Millie, you and Becky wait for me here. I'll get the tickets.
All right.
Mama, I still don't feel good.
I know, dear, but there's room on the seat. Here, you can lie down and put your head in my lap, honey.
What about when we get on the train?
I'm sure there'll be enough room on the train, too, for you to lie down.
Matt Jensen had been riding on the train that pulled into the Pueblo station. Wanting to stretch his legs, he got off the train and entered the station. He walked over to check the schedule board. Parker leaned over to speak to Compton.
Do you know who that fella is?
No, can't say as I do.
His name is Matt Jensen.
Damn! You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure. I've seen him before.
You think he might be going on the same train that we are?
It looks likely that he is.
So what do we do?
If he's in the same car as Santelli and the deputy, we ain't going to do nothing.
You mean we ain't going to get Santelli free?
That's exactly what I mean.
If we don't get Santelli away from the deputy, we won't get paid.
Is your life worth $500? Because if we go up against Jensen, we're likely to get ourselves killed.
Hell, there's just one of him.
Yeah, but he's carrying a gun with 6 bullets.
So what do we do now?
We wait and see. If he goes to a different car from Santelli, then we'll do just what we plan to do.
Checking the board, Matt saw that he had half an hour remaining until the westbound train was due into Pueblo. He hadn't eaten since lunch, but he didn't think he'd have time to order a regular dinner. So, stepping up to the depot lunch counter, he ordered a piece of apple pie and a cup of coffee. As he ate the pie and drank his coffee, he looked around the waiting room of the depot, appraising as best he could the people who would be his fellow travelers. The first ones he checked were the senator and his family. The little girl didn't look well, and Matt was struck by the expression of concern on the mother's face. He saw considerably less concern reflected in the face of the young girl's father. Matt also saw two men in handcuffs and was surprised to see that one of the men in handcuffs was Michael Santelli. As he was looking around the room, a reporter came up to him with notepad in hand.
Excuse me, you're Matt Jensen, aren't you?
Matt just stared at the gentleman.
Yes, you are. You're the one who took down Michael Santelli. He's here, you know, on his way to Redcliffe to be hanged. He's sitting right over there, right now.
The reporter pointed toward the bench where Santelli, Luke, Proxmire, and the girl were sitting.
Yeah, I saw him.
You know what would be good? If I could get a picture of you with Santelli. We could use the halftone method of reproducing photographs.
No, thank you.
Is Santelli the reason you're here in Pueblo?
No, I'm just passing through Pueblo. By the way, I didn't take him down. He was arrested by Deputy Sheriff Ben Mason. Deputy Mason's a fine officer.
Yes, but everyone knows that if you hadn't been there, Santelli would more than likely have killed Mason. You were the hero of that event.
I don't agree. The fact that Mason took Santelli on, knowing that he could be killed, makes him the real hero.
Yes, I guess you have a point there. But say, would you mind if I interviewed you for a story?
At that moment, a bright light illuminated the darkness outside as the beam from the great mirrored headlamp announced the approach of another train. Everyone in the depot started getting ready to board the westbound train.
Sorry, but that's my train.
13 people lined up to board the train. Jenny McCoy, Senator Jared Daniels, his wife Millie, his daughter Becky, and Matt Jensen waited at the last car. Deputy Sheriff Proxmire, Luke Chardine, Michael Santelli, Parker, Kelly, Compton Morris, and one more passenger, a man named Abner Purvis, chose the next to the last car. Just before they boarded, Proxmire looked over at Jenny.
Now look here, Jenny McCoy. We ain't gonna jump back off the train before we get started, are you?
Don't worry, Deputy. I have no intention of remaining in this town.
Good. Because after I get these prisoners delivered, if I come back and find you're still here, I'll be more than just asking you to leave town.
Leave the lady alone, Deputy.
Seeing as you're going off to jail yourself, it don't seem to me like you're in any position to be telling me anything. This here prostitute's being run out of town, and I'm charged to see it that she leaves.
All aboard!
Boarding the train, they stepped into a car that was illuminated. Not by electric lights, as had been the previous train, but by kerosene lanterns, three on each side, mounted on gimbals. There was also two coal-burning stoves in the car, one at each end, and the smoke was carried out by chimneys which passed through the roof. Matt took the very last seat in the car, which was exactly where he wanted to be. From his position at the back of the car, he would be able to observe without being seen to observe. He looked at the woman the deputy had called Jenny McCoy. Jenny McCoy was not a name he recognized, and if she was a prostitute, as he had heard Proxmire call her, she was certainly unlike any prostitute Matt had ever seen before. The train started forward then.
I'm cold, Mama.
Don't be silly. It's not cold in here. If anything, it's too warm.
I'm cold.
Darling, she is ill. She's probably having chills.
Can I have a blanket?
Oh, I'm sorry, honey. We don't have a blanket, baby.
Jenny, overhearing the conversation, got up and walked back to the seat where the senator and his family were sitting. She was holding a long coat in her hands, and she held it out toward the little girl's mother.
Your little girl is certainly welcome to use my coat as a blanket.
Madam, I heard the deputy address you, so I know who and what you are. Just what makes you think I would want my daughter to use something from someone of your kind for a blanket?
Jared, don't be rude. How gracious of you to offer your coat. Yes, thank you. I think that would work quite nicely. But I wouldn't want you to get cold.
I'm close enough to the stove.
It's a very pretty coat.
It'll be even prettier when it's covering a pretty little girl like you.
Turning, Jenny walked back to her seat. Sugarloaf Ranch. Smoke Jensen and his friend Duff McAllister, also a cattleman who owned a ranch in Wyoming, were in the parlor decorating a Christmas tree. The tree was strung with red and green ribbons, as well as brightly painted ornaments. Underneath the tree was an exquisitely hand-carved creche. Duff picked up one of the sheep and examined it closely.
Whoever did this did a mighty fine job.
The whole thing was carved by a preacher.
An artist, was he?
Yeah, he was an artist. But he was much more than just an artist.
Aye? Well, I'll tell you, lad. Sure, and if it was only for his art he was known, he would have a well-deserved reputation. I've never seen finer work.
The smell of freshly baked pastries wafted into the parlor from the kitchen.
Ooh, what is that wonderful aroma?
Ah, that would be Sally's bear claws. Come on, let's go try a couple out.
Aye, 'tis a good idea.
Duff followed Smoke into the kitchen. Both of the men grabbed a bear claw from the table where several of the pastries lay.
Smoke, you aren't supposed to eat any of those now.
Well, now, Sally, surely you'll want Duff and me to try them out just to make certain that they're good enough to serve at Christmas, don't you?
And how is it?
Smoke finished the first one, then reached for a second. Duff followed suit.
I'm not sure if I can tell with just one. It'll take at least two, I think, before I'll know whether or not they're any good.
Smoke, if you and Duff don't quit eating those bear claws, there won't be any left for Christmas.
Sure there'll be. It's a few more days till Christmas. All you have to do is make a couple dozen more.
Well, I've already made 24. This isn't a bakery, you know.
Well, just be glad that Pearlie and Cal decided to spend Christmas in Denver. Otherwise, you'd have to make about 36 more. With them gone, you probably don't need more than one or 24. Although, you could make 36 more just to be safe.
Oh, you're impossible.
Of course I'm impossible. Otherwise, you wouldn't love me. You know that. Oh, I forgot to tell you. Got a telegram earlier today from Matt. He said that his train is due to arrive in Big Rock at 6:00 tomorrow morning.
What time does that mean Sally will have to get up to go meet him?
Oh, I'd say about 4:30 in the morning would get her there on time.
What? Not on your life, gentlemen. I'll have you know that I will be warm in bed when you two go out to meet him.
Oh. Is that the way it's going to be? And here I thought that being it's so close to Christmas that you'd have a little more compassion in your heart. All right, if that's the way it is, you can stay home. But there's no sense in Duff and me both going to pick him up. I'll go by myself.
I'll be for going with you, lad. I'd be glad to go.
Did you hear that, Sally? He's not only going to go with me, he'll be glad to go. That's what he said. He would be glad to go.
I heard.
Well, I think you should know that it's good to see that I can count on some people.
Try not to wake me when you leave.
What? Aren't you even going to get up and make us coffee?
Nope.
You're one cruel woman, you know that.
So I've been told.
There's been a lot of snow up in the mountains. I hope the train has no trouble getting through the pass.
Don't they keep the tracks clear?
Well, yeah, when they can.
Sally walked over to the window and looked up toward the mountains.
I don't know, Smoke. It looks like there might be a big storm brewing.
Could be. Sally, what was that poem about snow that Preacher liked so much? You remember, he was always asking you to say it to him. It was by, some poet. I can't remember.
Ralph Waldo Emerson, The Storm.
Yeah. That's the one.
Who was this preacher? You mentioned him before.
Preacher didn't exactly raise me, but he almost did.
He gave you your name, too.
That's right. I was called Kirby until Preacher changed it to Smoke. Duff, he killed a bear with just a knife when he was only 14 years old.
Ugh, 'twould take quite a man to do such a thing.
You got that right. You probably wouldn't like him, though. He fought against the English at the Battle of New Orleans. He was just a boy then,
I've no real love for the English, laddie. I can tell you that for sure.
But you're English.
I'm a Scotsman, lad. We may be a part of Great Britain, but there'll be no love lost between the Scots and the English, I can tell you. 'Twill be another 100 years or more before the Scots forgive the English for flooding, and then forgiven it will be. But never will it be forgotten.
Uh-oh.
What?
Look out the window.
Sally and Duff looked toward the window and saw what Smoke was talking about. Outside, the snow was falling thick and fast, huge, heavy snowflakes that were quickly covering the ground.
Oh, this can't be good.
Maybe, maybe not. Just because it's snowing here doesn't mean it's snowing in the pass.
But it probably is, right?
Yeah, it probably is.
Matt Jensen awakened when the train stopped. It was about 2 a.m, which meant they'd been underway for 5 hours. When he looked through the window to see why they stopped, he saw a small wooden building painted red. A sign hung from the end of the building, but the angle between the car Matt was in and the sign was such that he couldn't see enough of the sign for it to be red. The conductor came through the car.
Folks, this is Buena Vista, and we'll more than likely be standing in this station for about half an hour. So if any of you want to, you can get off here and have a cup of coffee or maybe a bite to eat.
I don't want to go outside, Mama. I just want to stay here and sleep.
Oh, that's all right, darling. You don't have to go outside if you don't want to. You and I'll stay here in the car, but we'll have to give the nice lady her coat back so she won't freeze when she goes outside.
Matt rose out of his seat.
Your daughter can use this as a blanket.
Matt handed his sheepskin coat to the girl's mother.
Why, thank you, sir.
And I thank you as well, Mr. Jensen.
Jenny smiled as she retrieved her own coat.
I was right. I knew that I'd seen you before, just can't remember where.
It was a few years ago on board a riverboat on the Mississippi. The boat was the Delta Mist.
Of course, you were the hostess for the Grand Salon. But McCoy wasn't your name then. It was Lee, wasn't it? Jenny Lee?
Yes, I'm flattered you remember. I was married soon after that. Now I'm widowed.
I'm sorry for your loss.
Matt got off the train then. He went into the train station where he bought a cup of coffee. As he stood there drinking it, he looked around the room and saw Deputy Proxmire come into the depot with his two prisoners. Jenny was directly behind them. Santelli looked directly at Matt, the expression on his face registering surprise as if seeing him for the first time. Evidently, he hadn't noticed Matt back at the Pueblo Depot.
Well, if it isn't Matt Jensen. What you doing here, Jensen? Have you come to watch me hang? Because if you have, you may have to wait around a while.
Just happened to be on the same train with you, Santelli, is all. You can damn well hang without me.
Well, I got news for you, Jensen. I ain't gonna hang. What you think about that?
I don't think anything about it one way or the other. This may come as a surprise to you, Santelli, but you aren't important enough to even be on my mind.
I told you one day that me and you would meet again, didn't I? You remember that?
I do remember that, and here we are, met again. I'm on my way to have Christmas with friends, and you're on your way to... what is it? Oh, yeah, to get your neck stretched.
Don't you be counting on me getting hung, Jensen. No, sir, don't you be counting on it, because that ain't gonna happen. And this here meeting ain't the one I was talking about, neither. There'll be another time for the two of us to, let's just say, work out our differences.
Santelli, why don't you just shut up now? You've blabbered enough.
Abner Purvis, who had been the last man to board the train at Pueblo, was standing at the counter beside Matt and had witnessed the exchange between the two men. Turning toward Matt, he stuck his hand out.
How do you do, sir? The name is Purvis, Abner Purvis.
Matt Jensen.
I saw you talking with Santelli. Do you know him?
Not exactly, but I did run across him when he was arrested. Tell me, Mr. Purvis, do you know the other prisoner? Who's that with him?
Oh, I can't say that I actually know him, but I know who he is. His name is Luke Chardine, and I understand that he used to be a sailor and has been all over the world. He's seen places that the rest of us have just read or heard about. Hawaii, China, India, Australia. But he gave all that up when he inherited some land from his uncle. He calls the ranch Two Crowns, and he's been working it ever since, quite successfully, I'm told.
Why is he a prisoner?
He killed the deputy sheriff from Bent County.
He killed a deputy sheriff? That's pretty serious.
Well, I guess it would be if that was the way it sounds. But he claimed that the deputy and Sheriff Farrell were trying to rob him. Of course, the sheriff said they were only stopping him to ask him a few questions.
Evidently, the jury believed the sheriff.
Not entirely. It seems that Chardine had just sold a bunch of cows, and he had quite a bit of money on him. So he would naturally be worried if a couple of armed men suddenly came upon him, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I could see that.
Well, and you also have to wonder what a sheriff and a deputy sheriff from Bent County would be doing stopping someone in Pueblo County. Why didn't they just come to Deputy Proxmire or to Sheriff McKenzie?
It's a good question. Evidently, though, it was answered to the satisfaction of the jury.
The thing is, the jury pretty much had their hands tied.
What do you mean they had their hands tied?
Well, if you ask me, Amon Briggs, he's the judge, sort of forced them into finding Chardine guilty. Briggs is as crooked as they come, for all that he's a judge. He likes to do things his own way, and I'm not the only one who thinks this. Most of the folks think he browbeat the jury into finding Chardine guilty. He didn't entirely get his own way, though. He wanted Chardine found guilty of first-degree murder, but the most he got was involuntary manslaughter and 4 years.
4 years isn't all that bad.
Ordinarily, I would agree with you, but I'm afraid in Chardine's case, it is. He won't have a ranch left when he gets out. He won't have anything left at all, so I don't have any idea what's going to happen to him.
Matt looked over toward Luke Chardine and saw him sitting calmly beside the deputy sheriff, talking quietly to the girl.
What about Miss Lee?
Who?
I mean, Miss McCoy.
Oh, yes. That's another example of the judge sticking his nose into everyone's business. Jenny McCoy worked for Adele Summers at the Colorado Social Club.
Colorado Social Club. I take it that the women there are real sociable.
Yes, they are. Oh, I'm not going to lie to you, Mr. Jensen. The social club is a whorehouse, pure and simple. But Jenny McCoy, now, she wasn't actually a whore. She was a hostess. I never heard of her going to bed with anyone for all that they tried. But even if she wouldn't go to bed with anyone, she was very popular. Well, you can see how pretty she is. She's also very smart, and they say she has a way of making people feel like they're someone important, no matter who they are. They also say that you could tell her anything you wanted and know it wasn't going to get spread all over town. And if anyone was having troubles, why, she had a way about her of making them feel good. You know, making them think that everything was going to come out all right. But from all I've heard, she didn't whore with anyone. The thing that got her run out of town was having her picture taken when she was naked and sitting on the sofa with Governor Dawson.
Naked?
She claims, and so does the governor, that some men broke into the sitting room and forced her at gunpoint to take off her clothes so they could get a picture of them together like that. The governor thinks it was some of his political enemies behind it, and nobody has said so, but I'd be willing to bet that Judge Briggs was in on it from the beginning. Briggs is the kind of son of a bitch that can be bought off. Everyone knows that.
If everyone knows that, why is Briggs still the judge? Isn't that an elective position?
Elections can be bought, and there's no doubt in my mind but that Briggs bought the election that got him there in the first place, and now he just keeps on buying them. And I wouldn't be surprised if Briggs doesn't find some way to take over Chardine's ranch while he's gone.
Seem to have your fingers on the pulse of the town. You a newspaper reporter, or you just well-connected?
Well-connected? Well, I wouldn't say that exactly, but I do hear things.
What are you doing, Pueblo? Not that it's any of my business. I'm just making conversation here.
Well, I suppose I'm what you might call a jack of all trades. I've done a bit of everything since I've been here, but I've seen the elephant now, and I'm going back to the ranch that my family owns just outside Red Cliff. Well, I think I'm going to get back on the train. We should be heading out soon. Pleasure to meet you, Mr. Jensen.
As Purvis exited, the conductor and a man Matt assumed was the locomotive engineer came in, and they walked to the depot agent's counter. Their conversation was quite animated, so Matt moved closer to see if he could hear them. The station agent was speaking.
Look, last night a track inspector went up to the pass and checked it out. He said it was all right then. And then a freight train went through after that. So the latest word we have by telegraph is that the pass is open.
What if we get up there and we're blocked? What if we can't go ahead and we can't come back?
I don't think that's likely to happen. At least not in the next 12 hours. On the other hand, if you don't go and it does get blocked, you could be here for a month.
I can tell you right now, if that happens, we're going to have a lot of very upset people. Nearly everyone on this train wants to get somewhere for Christmas.
Well, you're the conductor, so the decision as to whether to go on or stay here is up to you.
What's the latest time you received a report on the condition of the pass?
Well, like I said, a freight train went through there no more than 2 hours ago and the pass was open then. Do you want to hear the telegram?
Yeah, read it to me.
The station agent pulled the telegram from his pocket.
As of 12 o'clock midnight, Trout Creek Pass is open with no difficulty.
With no difficulty. I find it interesting that he says that specifically. That's a good sign, I'd think.
There's been no new snow since I received this telegram. So my guess would be that the pass is still open.
Your guess?
It's not just a wild guess. It's based upon that telegram and the fact that there's been no new snow, dadgummit.
All right, we'll go.
The engineer and the conductor went back outside. Having heard what he wanted to hear, Matt let the other sound start drifting back in, and turning toward the waiting room, he saw that Jenny and Luke were engaged in quiet conversation. Their conversation looked to be private, so he made no effort to overhear them. Instead, he just concentrated on the cup of coffee he was drinking.
Nobody in town thinks you're guilty. I've heard them talking.
Unfortunately, none of the people who thought I was innocent were on the jury. Men of the jury thought I was.
No, they were just too frightened of the sheriff and the judge to go against them, that's all. That's why they said it was involuntary manslaughter instead of murder.
It wasn't even that. It was self-defense. The two men who accosted me were armed. Sheriff Farrell and his deputy Bates tried to rob me.
Santelli had been listening in to their conversation.
People like you are never guilty. Why don't you own up to it? Take my advice. If you've done something, admit it.
Santelli, the last thing I need is advice from you.
All right, don't pay me no never mind. I'm just trying to be helpful, is all.
Would you like to move closer to the stove?
Yes, that would be nice.
Luke stood up, then reached down with his handcuffed hands to help Jenny up.
Where do you think you're going, Luke?
To get warm. You may have noticed it's cold, and I left my coat in the train.
I don't want to think about what'll happen to you if you try to run away.
Where would I go without a coat on a night like this?
Luke and Jenny found a place near the stove that also afforded them a modicum of privacy.
We have something in common.
You mean because we're both under Proxmire's watchful eye?
Well, yes, I suppose there is that. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm told that you used to be a sailor.
I've crossed the Pacific 11 times. Wait, are you telling me you were a sailor?
Of sorts.
How can you be a sailor of sorts?
The difference is in the water we sailed. You were on the Pacific. I was on the Mississippi River. I worked for my uncle. I was a hostess on board the Delta Queen riverboat.
You're right. River, ocean, it makes no difference. We were both sailors.
How long have you been in Pueblo?
3 years. And you?
Not quite a year. I started teaching school, but when the school board learned I had been married to a gambler, they decided I was a bad influence on the children.
Well, that's ridiculous. I can't think of anyone who would have a better influence on children than you.
Thank you. That's very kind of you to say.
It takes no extra effort to tell the truth.
You are a very nice man. It makes me wonder why we couldn't have...
What? Why we couldn't have met before this?
It doesn't seem fair. I finally meet someone nice, and where do I meet him? I meet him when we are both under the care of a deputy sheriff. You going to jail, and I being run out of town.
It was almost different.
Oh? What do you mean?
I had heard about you, and I went to the Colorado Social Club just to meet you.
Really? I don't remember meeting you. I'm sure I would remember.
You didn't meet me, because I didn't stay.
Oh.
I wish I had stayed.
No, I'm glad you didn't stay. I don't think I would have wanted to meet you that way.
I understand. I think that's probably why I left. But at least we've met now. And I'm thankful for that.
Yes. At least we have met.
All right, folks, let's get back aboard.
The passengers who had come into the depot house now hurried through the brutal cold back onto the train. Fortunately, the cars were still warm, so Matt had no need for his coat, which was drawn now over the sleeping daughter of Senator Daniels.
How is she?
I'm worried about her.
Matt reached down to feel her forehead.
Feels as if she has some fever.
Yes. I wish we had stayed in Pueblo so she could see a doctor.
There's some fine doctors in Redcliffe, and at this point, we're much closer to Redcliffe than we are to Pueblo.
Yes, I was thinking that as well. Oh, I'm sorry, do you want your coat back?
No, I'm doing just fine. Let her keep it. She needs it more than I do.
Thank you. That's most kind.
In the car just ahead, Luke and Santelli were sharing a seat. Deputy Proxmire was in the seat facing him so he could keep an eye on both of them.
You know what I'm thinking?
I don't really care what you were thinking.
I'm thinking you're falling for that whore. Yes, sir, that's what I think. You've seen yourself a pretty woman and you fall for her. But here's the funny thing. You're going away to jail. And more than likely, the girl's going to wind up in another whorehouse somewhere. Tell me, how does it make you feel knowing your girl will be laying with anyone that has the price?
You talk too much, Santelli.
Oh, yeah? Well, talk is cheap. And right now, talk is all I've got. So I reckon I'll talk about as much as I want.
If you don't shut up talking about Jenny, I'll shut you up.
Oh, really? And how are you going to do that?
I'll do it the same way I did it before.
Well, what do you...
Santelli stopped in mid-sentence and then lifted his cuffed hands to touch his still sore black eye.
Did you do this?
Luke smiled, then turned to look back outside. Three rows ahead of the seats Luke, Santelli, and Deputy Proxmire were occupying, Parker, Kelly, Compton, and Morris were sitting across from each other in the front two facing seats.
When do we make our move?
Just before we reach the top of the pass, Compton. The train will be going slow enough that it'll be easy to get it stopped.
Who's going to go up on top? Because I'm telling you right now, you ain't going to get me on top of a moving train. Most especially in weather like this when it's snowing and the tops of the cars is likely to be slippery and all.
Don't worry about it, Compton. I'll go. I've stole a lot of rides on freight trains. And I've run on top of a lot of cars in good weather and bad. Won't bother me none at all to run along the top of these cars. I'll get the engineer's attention. As soon as I get the train stopped, you three take care of the deputy. Once we have Santelli, we'll cut the engine free, then go on down the other side of the mountain and leave the rest of the train sitting up here on the track.
I know you said you stole rides on a lot of trains before. You sure you can drive this thing?
Drive it, Morris? Who said anything about driving the train? I don't have to drive it. All I have to do is stick a gun in the engineer's gut. Then he'll do all the driving. Yes, sir, he'll be more than glad to take us anywhere we want to go. At least, he'll take us anywhere we want to go as long as there's track to run on.
I'm going to ask you again. I know the ward says he has the money, but seeing as we're the ones that's actually taking a risk here, what do you think? Do you really think Santelli has the money to pay us?
I wouldn't be doing all this if I didn't think there was some payoff in it. I sure ain't doing it because me and Santelli are tied.
1 hour after they left Buena Vista Depot, men could feel by the angle of the car that they were just now starting up the long grade that would lead them to the top of the pass. The train also began to slow, going from a rapid 20 miles per hour down to no faster than a brisk walk. Looking out through the window and into the darkness, they could see by the whirling white flakes that the snow had intensified since they left Buena Vista.
Remember, make your move as soon as I get the train stopped.
You can get the train stopped, can't you?
Yes, Morris. Don't worry about that. I'll get the train stopped, all right.
All right. We're all ready, so let's do it.